WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. A warm reception in London for Ukrainian President Zelensky after a meeting with President Trump that made the Oval Office seem more like the Octagon. And today,
the UK convening an emergency summit of European and other Western leaders, but not the US, in London after a top European official suggested America can no longer be considered as the leader of the free world. The Kremlin celebrating, mocking Europe and Ukraine, saying Trump gave a, quote, beating to Zelensky.
ABC's Tom Sophie Burridge in London. Israel stopping all goods and supplies into the Gaza Strip after Hamas rejected a proposal to extend the first phase of a fragile ceasefire. Sources telling ABC News, the Department of Homeland Security has requested the home addresses of potential undocumented immigrants from the Internal Revenue Service, part of its efforts to ramp up the Trump administration's immigration enforcement agenda. The challenge for the IRS, doing all this without violating tax privacy laws. This is ABC News. The race for New York City's mayor just got a little more crowded. ABC's Morgan Norwood tells us who else would like to live at Gracie Mansion.
Andrew Cuomo, New York's former governor who resigned amid multiple sexual assault allegations, now enters a crowded race, one that includes fellow Democrat embattled incumbent Mayor Eric Adams. Just as Adams is awaiting a final word from a judge on whether to dismiss sweeping federal corruption charges after the Department of Justice recommended the case be thrown out.
Saturday saw the ceremonial kickoff of Alaska's Iditarod dog sled race in downtown Anchorage. An extra 128 miles added to the 1,000-mile trek to include regions with enough snow for the dog-pulled sleds to travel. Musher Gabe Durham, not worried.
Now that we got bumped up to Fairbanks, the trail conditions are going to be really great.
Organizers also shortened the ceremonial start to under 2 miles from its normal 11-mile trek through Anchorage. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Judge Brad Schimmel is an anti-choice politician whose positions are too extreme for Wisconsin women. He supports a pre-Civil War law that bans abortion. But don't take our word for it. Hear it in his own words.
The 1849 ban on abortions, which, by the way, what is flawed about that law?
The 1849 abortion ban provides no exceptions for rape or incest.
What is flawed about that law?
The 1849 law criminalizes doctors and their patients.
What is flawed about that law?
Brad Schimmel supports an 1849 law to ban abortion with no exceptions. Tell Brad Schimmel, extreme politics don't belong on Wisconsin's Supreme Court. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Heading into the weekend, the tariffs from the Trump administration are set to take effect Tuesday, and Wisconsin farmers are bracing for impact, and some of them know what's coming after being hit by Trump tariffs in his first term. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Michael Slattery has run his farm in Mirabel for 25 years. He grows corn, soybeans, and canning vegetables. In 2018, when Trump imposed tariffs on China and it retaliated, Slattery says he lost 60% of his revenue. He and many other farmers were left with a surplus of product with nowhere to sell.
It takes decades to build up stable market relationships between an exporter and an importer. And so we were losing our biggest importer of agricultural produce because of these Trump tariffs.
Farmers would be affected twofold, as tariffs would also raise prices on things like fertilizer and equipment parts that are essential to farming operations. In 2023, Wisconsin exported almost $4 billion worth of agricultural products, with China, Canada, and Mexico as some of its largest trade partners. Trump says he plans to once again impose tariffs on those countries. Economics professor Thomas Kemp at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire says Wisconsinites would feel the impact.
You'd see pretty significant increases in prices in American goods markets, and you'd also see American firms looking to alter their supply chains, which I'm sure they are already creating contingency plans.
When Trump issued tariffs during his first term, he promised to increase the number of jobs in the U.S. That didn't happen. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see sunny to mostly sunny skies and highs in the upper 30s later this afternoon. A light west breeze. More clouds on the way tonight with lows dropping to the middle 20s. On Monday, partly sunny, upper 40s with a chance of rain. Currently 26 degrees.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our Monday morning show, Savannah Tomei Olson will join our morning team.
And John and Gordy will be the official spokespeople of the Russian Spy Network.
Join us.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8. A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Kripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are powered by Everlight Solar, and here's this week's episode. Hey, folks, welcome to another episode of the Kripescast. This week, we have the very funny Becky Robinson on. You've probably seen her videos, The Entitled Housewife. She's also done voiceover work for Middlemost Post on Nickelodeon. She was in Wild and Out. She was named Just for Laughs New Faces of Comedy. She's got it going on, okay? So it's going to be a fun episode. We actually do a little bit with her Entitled Housewife versus My Midwest Guy. So stay tuned for that at the end of the episode. But also, I want to let you guys know I am on tour. Got shows coming up this week in Chattanooga, Birmingham, Atlanta. And then next week we go Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, do the old Texas run. And in December, Elkhart, Indiana, and Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can check it out, kripescast.com/tour. And as always, we are raising money for Doctors Without Borders. You can check out Doctors Without Borders, doctorswithoutborders.org, or follow them at Doctors Without Borders. And ladies and gents, without further ado, here is my conversation with Becky Robinson. Oh, we have what is that, a golden doodle?
It sure is, Charlie.
What is,
this is Sandy.
Sandy Dunham.
Sandy's a female.
Oh, female. See, yeah. I honestly, I feel like every golden doodle looks like a lady dog.
Yeah.
Most people say he.
Yeah, but they do look a little feminine, you know, and they kind of act like it too. They're like kind of little, I don't know.
Yeah. They're kind of like a nice piece of furniture. A little bit, like a nice footstool.
Kind of like a restoration hardware, like a nice ottoman, you know, a little high maintenance, kind of a little bitchy, you know, but cute enough to where you're like, yeah, I need it.
I feel like, you know, the emotional support that we can get from animals, that can go a long way. That makes it worth it.
You really can. Yeah. She was a surprise gift in a relationship. And then we broke up and the person was like, she was technically a gift if you want her. And I was like, I don't want her. I need her. the road gets dark.
you know, that is the problem, I think, with getting dogs is you can stay in a relationship a lot longer than you should because of the dogs.
Yeah. And we went the opposite way.
I don't know what that means.
We said we got to get out of this relationship.
Oh, okay. So the dog wasn't even a consideration. It was just, it had to end. And what was going to happen with the dog was going to happen with the dog.
Yeah. I mean, we had a slight conversation about she's a product of a broken home, but she's okay.
She's okay. She's dogs can recover from that. Not quite as quick as kids, but dogs can recover from that, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
What have you been up to? You were on the road?
Yeah, been on the road. I had three cities last weekend, flew back. We always try to get that like that 4 or 5 a.m. flight out, you know, couple days in town and then fly out again. Just kind of that's like the That's the weekly plan right now.
You like that early flight, huh?
You go back and forth, but yeah. Do you hang around the city for a bit?
If I'm going to hang around the city, I like to do it before the show because it just gives me a lot of fun stuff to play with during the show.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's a good call.
Do you do a lot of that, like, get there beforehand, find kind of interesting stuff, incorporate it in the show? Or are you like so back to back, you don't have much time to do that?
Yeah, I used to in a simpler time. I used to like to get there early, but we've been kind of ping ponging really fast this time. We've been adding a lot of the people that come to the shows. We call them the Gearles. They're all like massive golf fans. So sometimes I'll go and like go golf with them or do something golf related or play pickleball with like a few of the girls. Or if I'm playing like a country club that weekend, I'll go early and, you know, do something with it. Usually helps at the country club so I can get to know like what some of the club scandals are, and I like to work that into the set, because there's so much that happens at these country clubs with like the new hot tennis pro coming in and hooking up with the married women and like all sorts of things, you know?
Yeah, that is, I used to work at a country club myself. I used to be a caddy. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and later on I did some bartending at a different one, just short stint. But you do you kind of figure out pretty quick. I did a show at a country club, and I found the swingers found me like real quick.
Oh, yeah.
And Now I say all those things, but I know that you know these scenes better. I mean, this is like, so give us the insight. Give us like what's really going on here at these country clubs.
I feel like you see it once, you know all of it. Like it's everything that's happening on the streets, but like with, you take that, but put a polo on it. And, you know, hide it a little bit behind like some Belvedere and, you know, a private door and a private gate and security. It's like, it's all the same. It's like, you know, hefty drinking, a lot of cheating, a lot of wives, husbands swapping, a lot of, you know, scandals, a lot of cocaine. But we were golfing with this one crew, and this girl was like, do you want Eastern, Western, or like whatever medicine? She like pulled out this thing and had every possible drug imaginable, just like in her fanny pack. I was like, what do the girls want today? Let's do it. Let's f it up. So they've got everything. They've got access to everything, you know? So it's, it gets pretty off the rails. Yeah. I mean, some of the things that happen in like the locker rooms afterward, it's wild.
Wait, so can we go back to this little pillbox? So you're out there golfing with a few gals at the country club. Where can you say roughly what part of the country this is in, so as to not give away the geolocation, but, you know, give us is it the Midwest? Is it the South?
I think that was probably Connecticut.
Sounds very Connecticut, actually. All right. So you're in Connecticut. And this is just a random group of people that you met on the road playing 18 holes.
And I think this particular one, they had like scheduled or worked into my contract that I would play like three holes with them. And I ended up playing a lot more than that because they were so fun. But
you chose the blue pill, huh? Good for you.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. So it was just like, let's party. Is that kind of what it is? Just a huge party on the golf course? That's like a Hunter S. Thompson amount of drugs, you know? That's straight out of Fear and Loathing, Connecticut. You could do a whole sequel to it.
Oh, you absolutely could. And it's interesting because a lot of them too are like, they're not, I mean, some of them, you know, some of the job, the positions they hold are like badass, very high up, very like CEO level positions. A lot of these women, and they're still like, they're like, roll my f-ing calls. Like I'm out golfing, but they're, you know, they're, and some of them, you know, are moms and they, you know, they do that. But like, yeah, I don't know. It's a fun web of these like women that come together just with the like thing in common of just, we are sipping, gripping and ripping, and we don't get like we have nannies at home, our husbands piss us off, they're, you know, they're hideous, we're fed up, And they're just like, we deserve and demand to get loose. And so it's always kind of like the general theme in common at like a lot of the shows and stuff. I always tell people like, it's fine to come alone because you won't feel alone when you're at shows. You know, so one posse will take you in under their wing and provide you some form of hallucinogenics. You do a lot of characters. Do you get a lot of, do people dress up as you at your shows?
Yeah. And in fact, I, you know, when I used to do exclusively like a character, that's how I start off with exclusively this Manitowoc Man character. People would dress up like that. And they still do to a certain extent, like wear a camouflage kind of suit coat type thing to the shows. But since I've kind of done a lot more that wasn't necessarily that character, it's mostly your standard issue camo and plaid and flannel kind of situation.
Which is
great. You know, you see a lot of great camo patterns. But it is interesting. We do have, you know, it's funny when you dive into a character the way like either of us have done, you almost find like you do it at first just because you think it's funny. It's something you observed. But then to see people relate to that and then feed the beast, like I can't, the way I feel about the thing I'm doing is that it was really not even built by me, because so many of the jokes, so many of the things to mention, so were things fans sent to me and I incorporated. So is that same on your end where people are like, oh, you got to go here, check this out, or do a bit on this aspect of it?
Yeah, so much. So many emails, so many comments, so many. And like, they'll comment things that are 1,000 times funnier than anything I'm saying in the video. And I'm like, damn, these girls are good. But it really started, it was based off my parents. And then, I honestly was like, no one's going to think this is funny. And I almost like didn't even post the first video. I was like, this is not my best character work. I thought it was like, I don't know. You know, sometimes we overthink things. I think some of my characters were getting too far down the line of like overthinking them. I was like doing this thing called the hummus guy for a while with this crazy curly wig and a towel over my shoulder. And no one ever laughed. Everyone just always looked at me confused as hell. And then this one has just, it's really taken on a life of its own. And the things they say and the places they tell me to go, like, you got to do a video on this. Or they'll tell me real stories of the things that happen at the shows. Like, we had to call the cops a couple shows ago. One of them was getting dragged out and she was like, she f***ed my husband.
Oh, she found someone at the show who had cheated on her husband. They got into a fight at your show.
Apparently, fists were thrown.
Wow. This is fascinating. You know, I want to dive deeper into that, but it was funny what you said about almost not posting your first video that kind of changed your life. Because that same thing with me, I first of all, I sat on the idea in some form for like 3 years and then I finally did it and cut it together. And then I was like, I don't know if I should post this, but I think that's an important like lesson for, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there just sitting on kind of like life changing ideas. And it's just kind of like, What do you think made you just go for it and post it?
I took an edible.
Okay. So there you have it, kids. Do the drugs. Okay. Kidding. Disclaimer. No. Kidding. How many milligrams?
It was actually probably like a nibble of like a 5 minute. I'm a puss. It was probably something small, but I think it was actually my older sister has like really guided me through. She's the first person that like made me go on stage when I was right before I turned 21. She made me try stand up for the first time. She's like, you've been talking about this forever. Like, we're going to have you do it for your birthday. And I just grew up like always trying to make her laugh. And, I showed her the video. We were home alone at my parents' house during the pandemic and she laughed really hard at it. And she was like, and she was working in the ER at the time where it was like, they still didn't have enough like PPE and it was really dark. And she was like, I think it's funny. And they were trying to make light of things too, just like get through their days. And she was like, I think it's f-ing hilarious. And so I take everything she says holds a lot of weight for me. And I think that was what like probably pushed it over the edge, along with like the giggles from the edible. I was like, it doesn't like think less. I was just trying to tell myself like, think less. It doesn't matter. Like if it made you laugh, maybe it'll make one other person laugh. And then that would make it worth it. And you know.
So was that the real big career changer for you? Was that the one, like the biggest moment right there?
Yeah, I think so. Anytime I've like leaned into characters, it feels like good things have happened.
Yeah. And what's your, did you, how'd you get into that kind of work? The kid, cause that's different from stand-up. It can be incorporated into stand-up, but it's really kind of like a Second City type thing. They specialize it in. So how'd you get into the character work?
You know, I've always done a lot of voices and like you did a lot of impressions growing up, weird stuff, but I think I always had like wigs and props and stuff. I was always like a, you know, those maybe a little junior character. Yeah. I think I just thought like things are funnier with some flair or some wigs or like maybe this at like as it's like layered down. Maybe I thought like I wasn't funny as is or like this is OK, but it would be much better if we threw something on it. And I just kind of started collecting wigs. And yeah, when I first moved to L.A., I got a job at like a YouTube company, just like uploading people's videos for them, like the Tonight Show and stuff. I got a 9-to-5 so I could do stand up at night. And so my parents would like not say anything. I was like, I have health insurance. You can't tell me I can't like do stand up and stay up all night at these shitty open mics. I'm going to do it. And I started filming like a little kind of man on street thing. I used to love watching like Sacha Baron Cohen and Eric Andre. And I was like, you never really see a female doing this stuff. And I always felt like I could break into anywhere and it would be fun to like see a woman doing that stuff. Cause I thought I could get away with more. And so I had like this videographer guy that would come with me. And I just started going places in LA, like landmarks like Venice Beach and Runyon in costume and interviewing people as characters. And, that was kind of how I just really always wanted to make like an Eric Andre show with a bunch of characters, I think. And then I liked doing them on stage and stuff and was just throwing tons of stuff at the wall. And probably also came from not believing in my stand-up very much.
Yeah. No, I get that. I feel the same thing. Cause I think sometimes for me too, the character was allowing me to like sort of have plausible deniability between me and the thing. It's like, yeah. It's not that I'm not funny. It's that character's just not a great character. You know?
Yes.
It's
yes.
Like so much easier. You don't have to show your true self. And do you find it then hard even now? Or have you sort of used the character as sort of a stepping stone to get to your true self?
I think each character has helped me be a little bit more myself. Definitely. There was a while I was doing this one character called Susie Chapstick that was... The characters all always somehow turn into like a form of an alcoholic. Like that's all, like always a layer of part of their personality that I use to like make them say things that I'm too nervous to say or something like that. And I remember Susie, I was doing this character so much and I started headlining as her. And then I got to the point where I like didn't want to try new material unless I felt like the material I had written myself, I would perform it as myself. And then when I performed it as the character, it got bigger laughs. And so I was like, I don't know. It must just be funnier as this character. And I don't know, helped me like be more bold. And sometimes now my sister's like, I feel like you're trying to turn into this entitled housewife and maybe it's not a good thing. But I just think, yeah, I mean, she is like an older, you know, more empowered version of a woman. But I think each one has helped me be like a little more outspoken because I can be kind of like, I don't know, nervous and like I want to people please and, you know, maybe not like express my needs to their fullest extent. And this character just like bulldozes in and is like, or a lot of my characters are very, you know, like that. I think when I was auditioning for JFL, they were like, you don't really have any like nice, like calm characters. They were all like in your face. And then I found this like little, I started doing the little Walmart yodeling boy and that one was calm. that's when I ended up getting new faces. Like they were like, okay, finally we see some range.
Yeah.
But
no, I mean that's a really interesting thing. Cause it's like, you don't often notice those things until they're pointed out in such a, and you're almost forced not forced, but like you're shown sort of a weakness in what you're doing and you're like, oh, well, I can do that. You know, it's almost somewhat easier when people tell you, just give me the thing that you want me to do. And let me see how I can do that. but there's a lot of time spent in like, should I go this route? I don't know. Is it really that's a lot of wasted time as opposed to just doing it, just making stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Did you find that the pandemic, like, obviously we all had sort of this captive audience at that point doing like online stuff. Was that like, did you find sort of like an explosion afterwards and you've just kind of been riding that high since then?
Yeah, definitely. That character. Yeah, that I had always posted stuff on like YouTube and, you know, Instagram and stuff and TikTok, and was kind of always like, all right, you audition for stuff. And then it's like, okay, well, I'll just make stuff in the meantime and throw it out. And, you know, that way I can play these characters, even though maybe I'm not getting roles on things or whatever, in addition to doing stand up, and that'll help keep me practicing and stuff. But then during the pandemic, yeah, it made, yeah, everything, like the social media stuff. I went from not selling tickets to selling tickets to shows. But I think a lot of people that came to the shows also, I forgot for so long, like, you know, they don't know shit. Like didn't know that I'd been doing stand-up for 12 years before this happened, and probably thought like, this girl made a character and now she's touring. And so luckily had a really good, you know, team around me that was like, I think you should still do stand-up as yourself during the show and not go full Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I had the exact same thing. Yeah,
it's fun. Really?
Yeah.
And were people confused by, did people not know you were a person for a while in addition to the character?
Well, yeah, a little bit. They're like, you know, because people, it's not, we think like, oh, they like a video, so they've gone on a deep dive of us.
Yeah, they know everything.
We're
yeah.
vain, you know, and we know everything. We just sort of assume. But no, a lot of people go for a video they don't know, but it's almost like a great sort of way to just catch a sort of a catch all, get a lot of people in, and then you can really show them what you want to show them. And I too was like, maybe I just do the whole thing in character. And I also had some people around me be like, yeah, that doesn't sound very sustainable, you know?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, how many jokes can I make up about having a husband and kids? I'm like,
right.
Only so far I can push that.
Well, what are the differences between you and your character? What are the biggest differences?
Just probably like the family, the whole, like, I mean, I guess the lifestyles have melded a little bit. I really have gotten, just because the character is open, I've been spending so much more time in the world of golf and stuff at these like events and at country clubs that I've started golfing a ton. I just joined a country club and I'm like addicted to it now.
That wasn't the case before. Like were you kind of like golf before, but now you're fully addicted to it?
I always liked it, but that's also part of why I created the character, was like, I always felt like I would never be welcome on a golf course because I'm too loud. And growing up, I remember, you know, my dad would like, he's a big golfer, and he would always try to get us into it, but it was always like, we don't belong here, like this is too buttoned up. And you know, they would say our shorts are too short, or
yeah.
And I just, you always felt kind of like, as a woman, like you're not meant to be there, like you're a second class citizen, like the locker rooms are here, they're kind of like, get the fuck out, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's changed a lot, and I didn't really know how much it had changed until I created the character and then started getting invited to these clubs. I was like, oh, this is like allowed now. Like the first couple that I did, I was like, I can't believe I'm allowed to like say these jokes at this nice country club. And even my parents at first, they were like, I don't know, Bex, it's a little close to home. And they thought my dad was going to lose his membership at his country club because it was like vulgar. And it even took them, their friends telling them that they were like fans until they started liking it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. So my dad was like, can I get some merch? And I was like, fuck you, Dad.
Yeah. What was that like? Like your parents initially, because what's your dad's country club?
It's called Tualatin Country Club. It's in Oregon. I grew up in a town called Tigard, Oregon. So yeah, he like wins the club championship every year, and like, you know, the geriatric division is his livelihood. Plays a couple times a day, and played in college, and yeah, and takes it very seriously. Like, never drink on the course or anything like that.
Really? So, wow. So, and he, that's sort of his life, his thing. And then you come out with this character, and at first they're not into it, not digging it. What was that sort of conversation like?
It was kind of how they'd been toward everything I'd done in my career. It was just like, we're embarrassed by this.
Oh, really? In like a kidding way, or in a, no, we're legitimately, you got to figure your life out.
You know, I don't think they ever believed in like the longevity of it.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A warm reception in London for Ukrainian President Zelensky after a meeting with President Trump that made the Oval Office seem more like the Octagon. And today,
the UK convening an emergency summit of European and other Western leaders, but not the US, in London after a top European official suggested America can no longer be considered as the leader of the free world. The Kremlin celebrating, mocking Europe and Ukraine, saying Trump gave a, quote, beating to Zelensky.
ABC's Tom Sophie Burridge in London. Israel stopping all goods and supplies into the Gaza Strip after Hamas rejected a proposal to extend the first phase of a fragile ceasefire. Sources telling ABC News, the Department of Homeland Security has requested the home addresses of potential undocumented immigrants from the Internal Revenue Service, part of its efforts to ramp up the Trump administration's immigration enforcement agenda. The challenge for the IRS, doing all this without violating tax privacy laws. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks win in Dallas. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks picked up a win against the Mavericks, 132-117. Now the Mavericks are shorthanded with Anthony Davis out, but was that one of the better performances of the year? Doc Rivers.
Yeah, I thought the two things, like the defensive execution and the offensive, you know, we've been preaching this all year. You find a set, you stay on the set. Do not go away from it. I thought we did that three different times in the game in a different set and scored on every option. You know, the power with Giannis in the post, just kept getting different baskets out of that. The rub pick and roll with Dame or Giannis coming off the five. And that's a good lesson for us. You don't need to go to anything else if that's working and exhaust the options. Our shooting was, as what we say every night, we have great shooting. And if you help with Giannis or if Dame gets to the paint or Kuz gets to the paint or Scoot, we get shots, and that's what happened tonight.
That's Bucks head coach Doc Rivers. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see sunny to mostly sunny skies and highs in the upper 30s later this afternoon. A light west breeze. More clouds on the way tonight with lows dropping to the middle 20s. On Monday, partly sunny, upper 40s with a chance of rain. Right now, it's 28.
March is tournament time, and the Lazy Elf Lounge has your courtside seats. Enjoy the big games on the big screens at the Lazy Elf Lounge. Score big with half-price wings during the tournament games when you dine in. Plus drink specials of Busch Light, Miller, and Bud products. And make a slam dunk with $2 off pitchers during the game. The Lazy Elf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow the Lazy Elf Lounge on the socials and online at LazyElfLounge.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. If you're headed to vote in New Hampshire's traditional March town meetings and need to register, bring proof of citizenship documents with you or you won't be able to vote. 20 other states have similar legislation pending. New Hampshire's HB 1569 eliminated sworn citizenship affidavits, subject to fines or imprisonment for lying, as evidence of citizenship. It now accepts only a birth certificate, U.S. passport, or naturalization papers. There is no evidence of any widespread non-citizen voting in the state, and the law was immediately challenged in federal district court as unconstitutional and an unreasonable burden. President Donald Trump's recent unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting generated a rush to tighten proof of citizenship legislation around the country. Voting Rights Lab is tracking 35 proof of citizenship bills in 20 states, many based on model legislation pushed by former Trump election lawyer Cleta Mitchell and her Only Citizens Vote coalition. Just this month, proof of citizenship bills were advanced in Wyoming and Missouri. 18 other states are considering bills adding proof of citizenship requirements, and the pending SAVE Act in Congress would require it for federal elections. A 2024 study by the Brennan Center for Justice found 9% of Americans don't have ready access to their citizenship documents. We have links to the Voting Rights Lab tracker and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, if you're just tuning in, this is the Kripescast on Civic Media, and this is my conversation with comedian Becky Robinson.
Even my parents at first, they were like, I don't know, Bex, it's a little close to home. And they thought my dad was going to lose his membership at his country club because it was like vulgar. You know, I don't think they ever believed in like the longevity of it.
Right.
I don't even know if they do now. I don't know, you know. they're very, very supportive now, but yeah, I think they just think like this isn't real, this isn't a job, this is like, and it's vulgar, but I'm always trying. I think they're now finally coming to the understanding. I've had to like beat it over their heads, like, yeah, this is your guys' fault. You know, I am this way because of you, because like when you get really riled up. And, you know, they don't cuss all the time, but when they do, it like really packs a punch. And that's kind of like, you know, what this character does. And I'm kind of like, this is a mirror of how you are. And like a lot of my stand up is because of the way we were raised and stuff like that. And I think now they're finally able to like laugh at that and not be embarrassed. But at first they were like, you know, I run into my friends at the grocery store and they said this was when I very first started stand up. They were like, we heard about some YouTube video of you talking about. My God, I'm like, when I was in college, I just like, you know, was throwing shit at the wall and was like talking about anything. And I was like, this is what I think is funny. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
But they're very supportive. They come to shows now. They love the attention. My dad like loves getting free golf stuff now. And they're just kind of like, this is just crazy, Bex. This is just so cool. So. How are your parents?
No, I think that they're pretty supportive of it. I think for a while though, when you're just going out to Los Angeles and you're not really completely honest about how much money you're making, or you're just like, I'm making exactly the amount that you would want me to be making. So you're not mad at, you know, so you're not like questioning it. So you're not considering, you know. And there's, it's not really a family. I'm one of 12 kids. So it's not like, you know, if you're not really in a position where you want to ask for money, or you're going to ask for money.
Because
then
it's
probably a case where you're like, all right, well, you're going to work this off back home or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But
I would like work the weirdest jobs or do that.
Oh. Let's talk about that. What's the weirdest job you've done?
I mean, I bartended for a little bit, but I had to wear like a corset. That was not good. This is so embarrassing. I don't know if I've ever said this publicly, but there was one time. this is bad. Okay, well, there was this thing in LA that I signed up for called Hot Bartenders LA.
Yeah.
And they like set you up with a photo shoot, and they like made you wear these like kind of little skimpy out. I mean, not like, more, just like a little dress. And there was one time that they were like, hey, you got requested to come on this, to bartend on this like party bus to Las Vegas. And it was like a bunch of doctors. And it was like a stripping thing. And all of them like stripped and bartended. And I didn't. But
all of the bartenders stripped and bartended.
Mm-hmm. They were like,
oh wow,
in like their underwear.
So you're on this bus with a bunch of like half naked bartenders, and you're like, I'm
yeah.
out.
And, they, and I was young. I was like early 20s, and they were like, you know, they were seasoned at this. You know, like they were probably doing some set jiggles as well. Like they were getting inverted on the poles and like all sorts of stuff. And I was like, I'll just be in the front, like, you know, whatever you guys want. And I think they probably got like tipped a bunch, but I was like, I don't care. I remember going home and just like crawling into bed with a sandwich and being like, I feel so filthy.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I've done, you know, in those new drawing classes, like the figure you draw.
A new person?
But it wasn't fully nude, you know, I had like boxers on. So, you know, I mean, but it was for a bunch of senior citizens in Greenville, South Carolina. Yeah. And it would charcoal drawing class. But there was
very this,
the one. Yeah, I know. But there was this gal, the gal ran the class after. She was like, how much for you to like take your clothes off for me to do a picture that I can draw at home? And I was like, whatever. What do you got? She's like, $25. I was like, all right. You know, great. So somewhere out there, because she was doing the Cain and Abel, you know how Cain is like grabbing the ground. So somewhere there's a nude picture of me doing that, you know. And then she sent me the picture after, or she sent me the painting. It looked really good. I should find that, as in
you're like bent over.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I'm hunched on the ground like this, you know. So it's pretty wild. It's pretty. I wonder where that picture is.
Did you find that the senior citizens were more respectful or more like they didn't give shit because they were old and they were like, we can do whatever we want. We can say whatever we want to this kid.
I didn't care. I didn't know what that. I mean, I did a lot of weird things for money. I'm going to tell you that right now. But that's probably not even the weirdest. But no, they were fine. I mean, those figure drawing classes, I think I did that for like $50 or $75 and then closed out the day with a solid 25 on the top. It's weird, you know, just the things that you're like, ah, I'm so broke. What's going on Craigslist right now? And is that where you found? I think I found mine on Craigslist. Sure. I don't know.
I think it was definitely Craigslist. Yeah. I remember so much like being the poorest of poor ever was, like playing colleges in upstate New York and then like being in New York and having 0 cents to my name and being like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Just like phone dead, just pacing around in like an ankle booty, like with blisters. Like what the f- was I thinking? Or being in LA and someone being like, you want to go out to lunch? And being like, I have no money, but not telling them. And then, you know, you just get water, but they're like, well, we got to split it. And you're like, I have nothing.
Do we?
Yeah, I didn't touch anything. No, I didn't even split the mozzarella sticks. So maybe if you could just,
I remember trying to buy my buddy a drink and just getting rejected. My credit card got rejected. I forget what you call that. But declined. And it got declined because I tried getting something. I needed some pants. So I went to Nordstrom. And then they they told me I get a discount if I got that credit card. So,
the Nordstrom credit card?
Yeah, but I got denied for that, which then I didn't know my credit took a hit. So then I couldn't get more than like a $200 limit on my credit card. And then, you know, these are the things you learn, trial by error, that kind of a thing.
For sure. I have something that happened to my credit like right after college. I don't know what it was, still affects me to this day.
Yeah, credit's a weird thing. It's kind of like the great abyss. I've never really taken time to figure out how it actually works. But smarter financial people out there have done that and can probably tell us. But
I know a lot of people kind of step in. I'm just like, we're rolling in cash, I guess, at this point.
Yeah. So do you have any thoughts on, like, you know, you have a great audience, you have these great characters, you tour the country. Is this kind of like, have you come to a place in your mind where you're like, oh man, this is great, I made it, this is perfect? Or do you have something out there that you're like, this is what I want to do next?
Do you say this is perfect?
Never say this is perfect. We always, it's one of two things.
I was going to say, never, this is perfect.
But from anyone, old me or past me is like, oh my, are you kidding? Retire. You did it. You're done.
You're good.
Go fish.
Remember when you had no money in New York? And they're all always want to do more and always, it's so interesting because you can't quite predict the path and you never know, you know, you can never like force things into fruition. And I think I'm really, really happy right now with where the first couple of years coming out of the pandemic, I was so scared all the time, just trying to do so many new things and like trying to handle, I don't know what it all meant. And like, I don't know, being good. Like, I don't think I had a lot of balance in my life and didn't really know how to take care of myself. And but now I love it. And I feel like it's very, very tour heavy. And the other projects that I was kind of like working on, have kind of taken a back burner, but I feel like now I'm finally juggling everything in a good way. And hopefully we've been working on an Entitled Housewife movie for a long time. And some other stuff, and some of it's coming together finally. It's just taken, you know, they say like you can't do everything and do it all well, like you start to drop the ball on some things. I feel like it's just, I've always kind of been like, but I still want to do all the things, and I think it just takes longer, so that's okay, because I think if I would have done all these things earlier, I would have fallen apart. So I'm kind of happy with the way things have happened. I did Wildin' Out when I was like 25. I don't think I was quite ready for that.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that, like Wildin' Out, like is that kind of a thing that like just got you sort of out of your shell, or not caring about like what people would think as they watch your stuff, or like what role did that have in like building who you are today?
I think it was just, that was one of the first times of like leaning into the characters and being like, this is when good things happen, and just like fall, like it was the first time I was doing stand up for a while, and then I was like, I'm bored. And then someone started doing these comedy rap battles, and I was like, that sounds fun. And then I just like accidentally won all of them and then started like auditioning. And it was just kind of like, oh yeah, every time I lean into these silly characters or like let myself be as goofy as possible and not so serious. Stand up sometimes, I don't know, it just can get so like serious, or when you're in LA for too long, it's like, ah. I don't know, I feel a little suffocated. And I started like being silly again, was like kind of found my old childlike self again. And the show was, yeah, I learned out of, I mean, we were filming like 3 episodes a day. So it was really, it was like a sketch comedy masterclass over like a few months. And the audition process was really long. We had to improvise as like a team for like a couple months, I think. And then they would just cut people like every day or every week or something like that. And so you could get to like the very last week of a couple months of improvising with these people that you thought you're going to be on the show. And then they'd be like, no, you're out. Just one girl kept rapping like Hamilton references, and she got dropped. And I was like, oh, man, so sorry. Like they were like, that's too smart for the show. Luckily my stuff was dumb enough. Made the cut.
I don't know how to take that.
But there was one day we were filming and I was like not doing well. And there was this episode we were doing with Jay Leno, and I had to like roast Jay Leno, and I had written jokes. I stayed up all night, and then we went to like the dress rehearsal and no one laughed. And everyone was like, this is actually really bad and it's offensive. And then Nick like grabbed me and was like, when you do your characters, like that's when good shit happens. And I just went to my little locker and I like sifted through my wigs and I went to wardrobe, because they really like doll you up on that show. And I was like, take this off. Like, I want to look, I was trying to do like kind of a country Southern, like, you know, pregnant by 14, just something type of character. And they were like, okay, we're not like supposed to do this, but they like, you know, finally took my fake eyelashes off and like gave me some overalls from wardrobe instead of like a crop top and let me do it. And it was like the best day of filming. So that was helpful. To hear that straight from him, like lean into this. I remember him saying like, you are weird and you have to lean into that because it's just your thing. Like, I don't know. And yeah. There was no one else on the show that was ever going to say that to me. Like everyone was kind of like every man for themselves on that show. I mean, a couple of the girls, we had like good camaraderie, but they would also only put one female in every episode. So it was like, all right, it's going to be one of us. So there was a little,
yeah,
you know, but
yeah.
I learned a lot. I was scared a lot of the time in that too. But I started touring right after that, thinking like, oh, people will buy tickets, and none. It was like, oh, TV credits don't matter. And then it was interesting to see that like this entitled character from the internet, that helped a lot. And just putting stuff online, you know, and not being so precious about it. Like, I gotta hold on to this. This bit's gonna, this is gonna wait until it's properly polished into a special. It was just like, okay, f*** it.
There is something about like perfection sort of being the enemy of creativity in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you can't, otherwise you just never put anything out. You kind of see like, it used to be like credits would get you, you know, able to tour the country. And then it was like, or now it's obviously the stuff you put out on social media, like that's the way to do it. Do you think there's another iteration coming, or do you think we're kind of like in this same thing? Like, are you looking to kind of the future of like, how do I play this in the long game? Or are you like in that thing of like just being consistent with like one joke at a time kind of way?
I see a little bit of both. I'm always like, yeah, what's going to happen next? How's this going to change? Are we idiots for filming everything this way now?
I know.
Right? When it goes away, we're going to be like, nothing works for the television. But then it's like, I don't know if that's ever, I don't know.
Yeah. I've seen some TVs that are just like turned on their side, and that's how they do everything. You know, it's kind of crazy.
That's it now. It's all horizontal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought about like some like virtual reality stuff. I don't know. It's so hard to predict where anything's going to go, but just not being precious about stuff. I am even still, I've had to like tell someone that works at our management company, I'm like, just upload the videos, because otherwise I'll watch them and I'll be like, this edit's not done. I'm like, just upload them, because otherwise nothing will.
Like, and do you think it gets better when you like let go like that? Do you think it gets better? Do you still have like, I wish I had put more into that one?
I still always think I wish I would have put more into everything. Well, I'm like constantly trying to work through in therapy. You know, nothing's ever good enough. Like, it's always never quite hitting the mark. Then I'm always, it's always really nice to see the comments and to meet people after shows that are like, I had a really hard time, and just watching these idiotic videos got me through. Like, I just always, it's nice to see the comments and be like, oh, people think that's funny. Okay. Well, that's good. I guess maybe again, like before with the first entitled video, like, I guess if it made one person laugh, it's worth it.
You know, that's really true. I don't think. Yeah, we probably don't give ourselves enough credit for that. But you know how it is when you're in like a weird way. And I always find it hard to believe people when they say some of that. But when I'm in a weird way and I see something and it just, I was down in sort of a weird place, but I watched and sort of reset my brain a little bit.
Yeah.
And you do realize that stuff is kind of important and helps you stay sane in kind of a really crazy world that we live in. We've got this thing on this podcast where is like a standard question we kind of ask everyone, but it's, what makes you say cripes? So cripes, you know, is kind of like,
just like cripes. Like,
yes, yeah. What? Well, yeah, that exactly. What gives you that reaction? What's your pet peeve? What's something that drives you nuts?
What movie is that from?
Oh, where someone just screams cripes. I feel like Chris Farley's done it in a movie at least.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Dumb and Dumber moment as well.
Oh, yes.
I think Jeff. Does Jeff Daniels do it?
I think it might be Jeff. If I were to guess, Jeff Daniels, he's from the UP. So I would think it might be a Jeff Daniels line, but I can't remember that specifically.
God, so when the dog in the house, which is often running late for things, I trip a lot. I stub my toes, you know, on the golf course. If I completely miss the ball, just really probably multiple times a day, the word comes out. I think my parents also use it heavily.
I wonder what would happen if your entitled housewife sort of met like my Midwest dad character, you know, like, let's, you know. So what's going on today? How'd it go?
Well, how'd it go? It didn't go well at all, you know, because I had to take the kids. The carpool lane was 8 miles long. And then I went to Starbucks and they were out of caramel, you know, seafoam. So I had to go with something
what?
Else.
Caramel who?
It's the topper they put on my coffee. And you, yeah, no, I know you never can memorize.
Well, now we're talking over each other. I apologize. Look, I just wanted to say, drink it black for cripe's sakes. That's the way God made it.
You know what? That's ungodly. It is the fall season. I'm feeling festive for the first time in years, and I'm just not going to do that. If I want to get a little festive, I can take on the extra calories, because you know what? I've been hitting quite a lot of Pilates, and I find that I have the ability to, you know, add in some extra calories.
What the hell is the matter with you, What's the pilot program? What are you flying now?
It's when I climb on the machine and I do tiny pulses.
Pulsing.
Pulse. I pulse. It's almost a Kegel, you know?
I don't even know what in the hell you're talking about. A Kegel? Listen, I think that's something erotic, and I don't, you know, I got to go to church later. I got enough to confess. If you want to get a workout in.
I'm sorry. It's quite erotic. And I can't help that. I get a little turned on with every class I go to. It's erotic, and it's meant to be. The creator of Pilates West was actually quite an erotic person. And if that makes I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm a little uncomfortable. I haven't even brought over you a casserole yet, and you're talking about eroticism. Look, I'll give you a little bit of advice in this neighborhood, all right? If you want to get a workout in, get out there and cut the grass, all right? That's what I do. All right. And if I see your lawn getting long, I'll be over there. I'll cut it for you. But it's not me hitting on you. It's just I'm being nice so I don't have to go to purgatory. All right.
Yeah, right. That's what they all say. Well, you know, I've got my gardener for that. He's cutting the lawn on a weekly basis. OK, so, you know, I won't be out there drilling.
Gardener money. Yeah. You got that gardener money.
Yeah, we do. We do. You know, and it frees up time so I can do more things with my children. Do I want to? No.
Oh, yeah.
I have to.
Yeah. Well, what are you even doing with your kids these days, huh? You take them fishing?
I'm taking them up and I'm dropping them off.
Oh, okay. So you're the Uber. I see how it is.
I am the Uber driver. And I get no stars. I get no tips. I have to do it completely pro bono.
That I can relate to. You know, I drop my kids off over at the pond, you know, and then I says, take your freaking bike. But, you know, these days they're like, there's weird people in vans. I was like, well, don't go in the van, you know, flip them the bird like we used to do back in the day. But
that's right. See,
I tell you what,
like a good person. You sound like you know how to properly teach the chitlins what they need to know.
You know, you can't raise them the way you used to be able to. I tell you that.
You certainly can't. No.
That might be what's wrong with them today. But, you know, I won't go down that road anyways. Listen, I'll see you around. If you ever need your gutters cleaned, you let me know. Okay.
Yeah, we'd love that. We've been looking to hire someone for the gutters and I don't have anyone yet. So if you could pop over and we've been waiting on your casserole. You know, you said you'd do a housewarming surprise and we haven't seen that yet. So our door's always open.
I just, you know, go on, come over, get a little flavor of the land, figure out what you like. Are you a green bean gal on the casserole or you tell me we got a bunch in the freezer. I'll bring you one right over and I apologize. It's late.
Oh, they're frozen. They come frozen. They're not fresh made. Well, you know, in that case, maybe just hold off and just bring yourself over. How about that? Maybe we'll make something for you.
Oh, for God's sakes. I'll bring you a fresh casserole. Anyways, well, this was real good. Yeah. I suppose it's about that time.
I just got Botox and I can see that only half of my face is moving. Do you see that?
I was going to ask you if you were having a stroke, but, you know,
and
that makes a lot more sense.
I've got to call my gal if I can send her this video and show her that she's f***ed up.
Why is everyone getting the freaking Botox these days? I don't understand it.
It's for mental health.
What? It makes you feel happier?
It's so my brow doesn't furrow every time my husband says something stupid, which is every other second of every f***ing day. See,
my brow...
Yours is
it burrows permanently.
Yours lives in a furrow. It lives in a state of furrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we call those elevens. When there's two lines there, that's called elevens. And we want to see none of that. We want to see a forehead of pure butter. That's the goal.
Well, why this means that I'm thinking, that I've spent my life thinking. Why the hell do you want to get rid of that?
Yeah, I want everyone to think I know the answers and it requires no thought whatsoever.
Well, that's all the time we have for now. But if you want to listen to my full Cripes Cast, check out the Cripes Cast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down. Just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin. The Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No. Gotta keep her moving.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we hope you had a great weekend. Jane is back. We have another installment of Beyond the Cheese for you. And don't forget, this shouldn't be a thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 11. The Todd Allbus Show.
Think about how many people in our communities, our friends, our families, our neighbors, our postal workers, carriers, people that work at our Veterans Affairs hospitals, USDA. Here's what Marjorie Taylor Greene, Donald Trump's lieutenant, thinks of all the people I just mentioned.
Federal employees do not deserve their jobs.
That's what Donald Trump and MAGA believe if you are a federal worker.
The Todd Allbus Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Damage control for Ukraine after Ukraine's President Zelensky's heated meeting in the Oval Office. Zelensky and other European leaders meeting in London today. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer.
The purpose of today's meeting was to unite our partners around this effort to strengthen Ukraine and to support a just and enduring peace for the good of all of us.
Starmer confirming that the UK and France would work on a Ukraine peace plan to then be discussed with the US. He also announced billions more in military aid for Kyiv, using the profits from frozen Russian assets. The Social Security Administration says it plans to cut 7,000 jobs and reduce the number of its regional offices from 10 to 4, part of President Trump's efforts to reduce the size of the federal government workforce. Meanwhile, many federal employees received a second email from Elon Musk's Doge team demanding again they list 5 tasks they completed last week or be fired. This is ABC News.